Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. It's January 23rd, another glorious day in the mortgage industry, and we're thrilled that you're joining us again from wherever it is. We have people dialed in from various parts of the country, and we know we have everyone listening in mostly via the connection through Blog Talk Radio. A special thank you out to our sponsors as we get ready to launch into this broadcast. Special thank you goes out to all of them, those that are the regulars here on the broadcast, but also a special thank you goes out to New Penn Financial, one of the new non-conforming, one of the first just out of agency conforming lenders that are out there. You can check them out by going to our website, lickinonlending.com, up in the right-hand corner. You'll see their ad. Click on that ad, and you'll go right into their website and a full range of products and services that they have that are exciting, really interesting. Again, I keep talking about that, but you know, who's behind that? The father of mortgage-backed securities, Lou Ranieri. So it's pretty exciting. Something you want to check out and a new positive trend for our industry. Today, we have a special guest later in the program, Doug Duncan, chief economist for Fannie Mae, will be joining us in the program here in just a short amount of time. If you've ever heard Doug speak, you know not only is there a lot of wisdom, knowledge, just a great delivery. I'm really excited having Doug on the program, and we know many of you are dialed in from all over the country to listen to this. We had a fabulous response to the notice that Doug was going to be there. So we're looking forward. Stay tuned all the way through the program. But as we do each and every week, let's start off by getting our interest rate report, market report, from Joe Farr, MBS Quote Line. Joe, good to have you on the line. What do we have today, man? MBS prices, how are they doing?
Well, they're about unchanged on the day so far today, but that's a good thing because they were lower this morning. It's been a good bit of time this morning in the down four, down five range, and we've climbed back up to where we're flat with where we ended Friday. So, you know, a little further improvement, we might see favorable price changes come from some investors.
That's good. Well, last week, let's see. Oh, the Dow is off about 50, though, you said.
Been no announcements today so far, so it's just sort of natural movement. Dow is down just a bit. Let's talk about last week. Yeah, we saw MBS prices fall pretty far last week. We lost about 21/32 on the week, or about 66 basis points, and as a result, mortgage rates rose. So, and it's important to note that those are MBS prices, and the MBS prices really aren't reflecting the increase in the guarantee fee that we'll talk about a little more when Doug comes on. But the mortgage rates would have, especially for longer-term locks, would have increased more as those prices begin to reflect that increased guarantee fee. But last week we saw more MBS prices fall anyway due to the fact that things seem to be getting a little better. U.S. economic environment seems to be getting better. Most of the announcements last week were at or better than what was expected, and were better than the month before. So I'll be curious to get Doug's impression on all that. But the market perceived both U.S. economic improvements, and then a big improvement came in the jobless claims. The jobless claims fell to the lowest level since April 2008, so it was a good sign.
Very encouraging.
And then things in Europe seem to be getting better. Even though there were downgrades of the debt of many of the European countries, there's just a general belief or feeling that it may not spread in such a bad way to the U.S. and the ramifications might not be all that bad. So we saw a little bit of the flight to safety that had incurred over the last year or so reverse itself, and the Dow rose 350 points, but the consequence was MBS prices fell.
Well, let's see. What do we have coming up? There's a few other things going on. CPI, PPI.
Yeah, and again, I'll ask Doug about this, but the inflation has not been an issue. It's you know, we've seen CPI and PPI, both the core CPI and PPI have remained fairly fairly low and within the range the Fed likes to see, although they have been rising, and the question might be how quickly will they rise in the future. So it was good to see them stay fairly fairly constrained. And then
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say I was going to go on to this week because I know we're trying to get through here quickly. Lots of interesting things coming out this week. One, the State of the Union address tomorrow night. Most of that, the content of the president's speech will have been released before tomorrow night, but it will still be interesting to hear what he anticipates doing as it relates to, one, jobs, and two, the general economy, and then three, specifically the housing market. So I'll be watching to see what happens there, as I'm sure all of you will as well. And then the big event for the week is going to be the Fed meeting. It ends on Wednesday. The statement will be released about 12:30 Eastern time on Wednesday. No expectation for an announcement to QE3. I shouldn't say no, but very little expectation that that will actually be announced. But this will be the first time that they produce an interest rate forecast or a Fed funds rate forecast. So we'll see where they expect the Fed funds rate to be at each of the next 3 years. Interesting, they're going to release where each individual Fed member thinks the Fed funds rate will be, and when do they think that it will first rise, go higher. So that will be interesting to see.
That will be, and that's a first, I think. We'll have to ask Doug about that. He's familiar with that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's fascinating.
And then a number of pretty significant economic announcements this week, with durable orders coming out on Thursday, jobless claims coming out, and fourth quarter GDP. First measure of fourth quarter GDP comes out on Friday. The general consensus is that it will show a 3.1% growth for the fourth quarter, which compares favorably to a 1.8% growth, as was the final reading for the third quarter. So all that, plus some pending and new home sales this week, and then consumer sentiment leading indicator. So it's just a week full of pretty significant economic events and treasury auction. So good to stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. You got to have MBS quote line to stay tuned on all of this stuff. Appreciate it, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back. Appreciate you being with us each and every week. And a lot of you tune in just for this next report, because there's so much moving through the legislature at the federal level, much less the various states' levels, that it is almost impossible to keep track of it all. And that's why we have Alice Alvey and her team of professionals there at Mortgage U tracking everything moving down the legislative highway. Alice, I know you're out traveling. We appreciate you dialing in to be part of the broadcast today. Appreciate it very much. What part of the country are you in, Alice?
Well, I'm out in Philadelphia at Radian Sales Conference, talking to them about FHAs and PMI. So lots of good stuff.
Lots going on in the world of PMI, the mortgage insurance world. And be sure to greet all our friends there at Radian. So appreciate it. Alice, what do you have for us on the legislative update this fine day?
Well, you know, I wish I could get more concrete because it just really seems as I keep sending my update to you guys each week. I go, okay, here's another bill that's going to try and address something about Fannie and Freddie, which, you know, I don't think Doug's going to be able to talk to, you know, tell us kind of which one of these proposals is actually going to come to fruition or which one of these 30-some-odd that are out there now. It seems every week there's a
30.
New one that,
wow.
Yeah, you know, I don't, you know, the number's close to that now because we have a new one, Senate Bill 1963, that basically trying to propose to revoke Fannie and Freddie's charter and establish a new mortgage finance agency. So I'm just going to keep track of the list, folks. And as we see maybe a group of them start to move forward, we'll let you know. But it's hard to see if anything's going to happen potentially in an election year anyway. There's another bill that came out, House Bill 3733, proposes to require Fannie to reduce the interest rate on all of their loans. You know, another one of those attempts that came out actually about mid-December. So all these are sitting in committee, and all we can do really is kind of watch to see what might surface. But I guess my feeling is the number of them just keeps growing, so at some point these issues should hit the table. There are actually, you know, as far as QRM and QM, listen to last week's show. We talked a little bit about the presentation that the Mortgage Bankers Association did that talked about QRM. We don't really see any immediate movement on QRM since it's so many regulators that have to get together on it. But QM, there are some rumblings from some that maybe something will happen this year. How's that for a definite statement?
maybe something definite.
Maybe
possibly. Well, that's about the right, that's about the right perspective.
Right. Well, what I do know is FHA is coming out with a couple of changes. They are now saying they're very close to releasing their proposed rule, or actually would be a final rule now about the seller concessions. I emailed MBA again late Friday. We don't know if they're going to go all the way down to 3% or if it's going to be something like 5%, but that is expected to come out. And then HUD's final rule that just came out about how they're going to use compare ratios now in determining if a lender's eligible for the lender insuring program is going to be clearly a two-year average by state. So for lenders, you go, okay, well, you know, I was probably managing it, watching it at that point. What I think what I'm concerned about is the rest of the text in the final rule. We expect this is going to be effective within the next 30 days, but the published date is probably going to be like last Thursday or Friday or potentially today. Well, 30 days from then when it's in place. HUD basically ignored the few comments that they received. You know, it was interesting. They said, here's what we proposed. Thank you for commenting, but we're going to do it our way anyway. And then when you got to the end, they basically said, lenders, you're accountable, regardless of what total scorecard says. So I think you need to read the wording in this. FHA is pretty strong about lenders are completely accountable for the file. You got to be careful if you think I haven't approved eligible and I'm good to close. So there was a big warning message in that on top of their modifications to lender accountability. So stay tuned for that, but really be ready for it, you know, by the end of February, the last week of February, that'll all be in place. As far as the rest of the legislative update, we'll get you more information next week as we get a chance to get Congress settled and see what they're going to start doing for the year ahead.
See what they focus on. Yeah, I wonder if the presidential election is just going to overshadow anything from this point on. I suspect that's going to be somewhat the case as we look at it. But Alice, thank you so much. I hope the fog clears there in the Philadelphia area. Again, greet our friends at Radian. Wish you the best, and thank you so much for being in it. I know you're going to have to drop at some point along the broadcast, Al, so we just wish you a wonderful day. Hopefully you can hang in here for part of the discussion with Doug, but we appreciate it so much. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back. Appreciate you very much being with us, tuned in. Again, remember, we got Doug Duncan coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll be talking with him and Doug about all that's going on in the world as it relates to race, market, the economy, wealth of information. Stay tuned. But another person who is a wealth of information, as evidenced by all the places he's talking and all the people he's talking to, is our very own Profit Doctor, also known as Andy Schell, also known as my business partner. Good to have you on the program, Andy. Got a couple questions.
Dave.
Folks, I just want to tell everybody, you know, you do such a great job of doing these wonderful presentations that you do for these where you speak and then on the radio. But there's just been some questions, Andy, I've been itching to ask you. Because you know, and many who know me know, I'm a non-accounting type. And the fact that you and I get along as well as we are, that is a bit of a divine intervention, and we're grateful for that. Any divine for
maybe it's because I'm not an accounting type either.
Well, you know, but you do it so well and so convincing. So here's my question. I've got three quick questions for you, Andy, on your brief segment that we want to cover today. Is accounting isn't the first thing that most businessers, that comes across most business owners' minds. Why do you think that is? Why is it most of us that own a business, so shockingly, we're in the business to make money, why do you think we don't have that in the forefront of our mind?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons why people don't think about accounting, and one of them is that if the bills got paid, payroll got met, so everything must be fine. And you know, accounting people as a, just generally aren't the kind of people that run around yelling. We're not the some of the other side of the building, people are screaming all the time. So in the accounting world, it's much more of a kind of just a, you know, just go with the flow, low key, keep the numbers straight kind of people. And so, you know, the greasy wheel gets the grease. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. And so in this case, people don't normally hear about accounting because accounting people don't scream and yell. And as long as your benchmark is, did the bills get paid? As long as they did, then you're okay. The problem is, looking at the results of an operation and saying, as your only metric, your key performance indicator, if your only key performance indicator is did the bill gets paid, then you could be losing every month and out of business soon and not even have a clue that that's happening.
And we've seen that happening as we consult the different companies. The bigger the balance sheet, sometimes there's even a mistaken notion that we don't have to pay as much attention to it, but more so than ever. But there's another thing looming. We've talked about it on the radio program, but why do you think it is critical now more than ever that executives make accounting their number one focus? I mean, it's important to build production. All of production is so important. That's a given. But why is accounting more so this year and moving forward got to be in the forefront of every business owner executive's mind?
Well, because the true metric for measuring a business success is profitability, long-term cash flow. I mean, we're hearing about companies that are missing payroll last week.
Yeah, just heard of another one this morning.
Poor cash flow management. And so the metric needs to be more than did the bills get paid. It needs to be, is your financial forecast right? Is your cash flow forecast right? And the one, the sleeping giant, the gnarly dog in the basement that nobody wants to talk about is that the NMLS call reports are due, and they have to be submitted. And if they're not done right, here's what can happen. If they're not done right, submitted right, then the first thing that's going to happen is that the state regulators are going to say a misfiled report is not filed at all, and you can have your state license pulled. Second thing that happened is if you filed it knowing that it was incorrect, but you filed it anyway, that's called fraud, and you can get not only your state license pulled, but you can get prosecuted. So, and all those things are happening back in the dungeon where the accounting people are working, trying to get all this stuff done. And if the systems aren't interfacing, if the data is not being captured at the very beginning for every single loan, which is what's happening most of the time, people don't get the data from the origination systems like they should, then it doesn't go into accounting correctly, it doesn't get filed correctly, and the owner gets sued because they filed misreports.
Well, okay, for those of us who struggle with or suffer from accounting avoidance, give us some first steps to recovery here. So, and we're going to dive into these further. So those of us who have accounting avoidance, what are the first steps?
Well, the first thing
is,
you can't put me in a box like that, Dave. You know that. Okay, the first point is, if you didn't know it was broken, how do you know that it's fixed?
Yeah.
So if you don't know what the problem, I had an email earlier today with some folks who were telling me they think everything's fine. And I'm going, how in the world do you have a clue if everything's fine? If you don't know it was broken, how do you know if it's fixed? So the first thing for this process improvement plan, like you do for the folks where you teach about how to do origination better, is you need to get a qualified person to come in and do an assessment and an improvement plan. And you really need to hire an expert, someone who can come in and be a review the activity, a CFO, CPA, who can come in and make sure everything's done right. And then it's a matter of making sure the data is captured correctly, because it's really all about knowledge and structure and process. That's the ABC, knowledge, structure, process. If you have the knowledge and have know of what needs to be done, then you build the mechanisms to do all the things that need to be done right, so the call reports get filed, cash flow forecast gets done, budgeting gets done, margin preservation gets assessed, and then once you know what needs to be done and how you're going to do it, then it's a matter of implementing the process, and that's a lot of change management discipline that, you know, we do as a firm. So those are the key things to do.
Well, we're going to dive into some of those steps because this is the new year, and what does every executive have, and most of us have, carrying going into the new year? New Year's resolutions. And one of the New Year's resolutions that our listeners should be focused on is overcome accounting avoidance, and we're going to step you through how to get back into it. So we're going to be covering that over here the next few broadcasts. We appreciate you tuning in. Stay tuned. We're going to have Doug Duncan coming up here in a few minutes. So we'll be right back after this brief word.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Lincoln and Lending. We're so thrilled to have you with us. Each and every week we have Tony Garitano talk to us about some aspect of going on in technology. Tony, good to have you on the broadcast today. Want to make sure you're there.
I'm still here, Dave. Can you hear me?
Good. We hear you loud and clear. Good. You know, we got a Super Bowl coming up, so there's a battle between the various powers, but a lot of people in the mortgage industry are talking about the battle for the borrower. Give us some insights to what some of those battles are and how they're lining up.
Well, I think that a lot of people throw the term out, Dave, and you think it's, oh, well, how can I get new business? And who's going to get more business than the guy next door to me? And that's really not what it is. It's really about who's in front of the borrower in a meaningful way so that you can both get that business from the borrower now that the guy next door may not get, but also so that you can keep that borrower with you for the next, you know, 20 years and service them in new and different ways. So the battle for the borrower isn't just about today. It should be something about, you know, a lasting roadmap that's going to lead you into a lasting relationship with that borrower, really in the long term, Dave.
Well, you know, everyone who hears the name Tony Garitano is synonymous with mortgage technology. So if there's a battle, and there's no question there is a battle for the borrower and a shrinking borrower, and that battle, we talk a lot about it, and I want to get more into that because I think it's a great, epic battle that's going to go on this year more so than ever. But what technology out there can be used to ensure that, you know, the participants, whoever's in that battle, has a better shot at winning that battle for the borrower?
I think in order for lenders to get there, Dave, they have to add another element to their technology due diligence process. Instead of talking about efficiency, ROI, process improvement, they also need to make technology decisions based on how that technology touches the borrower and how that technology improves the borrower experience. For example, it's not enough to check off the fact that you're on Twitter, that you're on LinkedIn, that you're on Facebook, that you have a website. Well, what does all of that do to get you in front of the borrower? That technology is great, but if you're not using it to get in front of the borrower to say things that the borrower is interested in hearing that gets them to go from your Twitter account to your website to fill out an application, well, then all that technology that people talk about to get you in front of the borrower,
yeah,
to win the battle for the borrower, well, you're losing the battle for the borrower,
yeah,
because you're not using it the way it's supposed to be. And also things like electronic disclosures and electronic point-of-sale processes and services. It's great that you have them, but are you offering them up to your borrower? Are there,
yeah,
any incentives for the borrower to go that way, even though it's more efficient for you? And is that process really great for the borrower? So when you think,
yeah,
about technology, think about how it impacts the borrower and not just how it makes you more efficient, and also how you can get them involved in your technology.
Yeah, I see social media doing that, but I hear the battle for the borrower and I hear about technology and it not being used properly. It reminds me of the treadmill and my battle for the bulge I've got going here in my own physical being here right at the moment, New Year's letter. And that, if I don't get on that treadmill, if I own one and it's a good one, if I don't get on that darn thing, I'm not going to get the benefits out of why I bought it. So that's great, Tony. That's good. Appreciate you, Tony, coming on each and every week and bringing an update for those of you who have not tuned in and gone over and looked at the Progress in Lending website. I encourage you to do that. Tony, it's good to have you with us. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
It's always a pleasure. Have a great week, and we'll look forward to having you on next week. We'll be right back after this brief break, and promising you, Doug Duncan's next. Stay tuned. Be right back.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lincoln on Lending Show.
Good to have you back with us, and it's even more exciting to have as our special guest today, Doug Duncan, who is the chief economist for Fannie Mae. It's an honor to have Doug. Doug is, I just realized I've buried Doug's bio here. I know he is with the MBA for years, and anyway, he doesn't need much of an introduction. Doug is well known, well spoken of out in the industry, and it's a real honor to have you here on the program today, Doug.
Well, thank you, and as for the bio, my mother always said, make it short because they'll make up their own mind once you open your mouth. So I never worry about the intro.
Well, speaking of your mother, we share the same area. We both grew up in the same area, Minnesota, Fergus Falls, Minnesota. What a great treat to meet someone there and who's done as well as yourself, Doug. Doug, we've got so many questions that we want to get into, and I want to open it up with one. It's a broad question, but it's really what I think, you know, I like what you said one time, one of your talks, you know, I got a lot of things to say, but it's what the audience want to hear. I want to hear this. You speak all over the country. You have probably one of the most unique fingers on the pulse of what's going on as an industry. What is the most important message in 2012? If you had to put it up, there's the number one thing that you would like to communicate to our industry. What is the most important thing that we should be focused on?
Well, we actually, in our January outlook, we thought carefully about what to use as a title because we want to kind of indicate what we thought the theme would be for the year. So the title of the January outlook, which is up on our website, is 2012, Year of the Political Economy. Now, the reason we said that was I know of no prior time, at least in my professional life, that there has been as much volatility in the global economy, the domestic economy, and in the market of interest here, the mortgage market and real estate market, that's been driven by prospective or program, timed program changes, or just uncertainties. So, in fact, you may have seen last week, John Williams, the new president of the San Francisco Fed, said they've done some analytics that say at least 1% of unemployment, which is over a million people, is due to the uncertainty in the planning horizon. Economists tend to try to talk about themselves in the abstract from other things, but it is politics that sets the rules by which markets work, and lots of rules in flux.
Well, that's a good segue. Alice, are you still on the program?
Yes, Dave, I'm here.
Good. I know you have to leave, and I know I want to get your questions in first. Doug gave a great segue to rules, regulations. You talk about it each and every week. Do you have any questions for Doug before you have to leave the program?
Yeah, I guess I'll just segue off of the word uncertainty. You know, we keep hearing, you know, is all the regulatory uncertainty really that much of a factor in where we think the economy is going as far as the mortgage industry is concerned? That regulatory uncertainty, the QRM, QM.
Absolutely. We believe it is. And it has led us to be very cautious about growth expectations, warning people for the last 2 or 3 years to expect below average growth because so many things are changing. Let me take just at the macro level. We did an analysis looking at all of the tax provisions and regulatory interventions that occurred December 31st, 2011, that will occur December 31st, 2012, and the new taxes that start January 1st, 2013 related to the health care bill. Our estimate, if nothing has changed, but things as they exist in law and regulation today continue through that time period, the total impact from a GDP perspective is somewhere between $500 billion and $750 billion. That's 2 or 3% of GDP. That is a level of uncertainty that really is unprecedented in recent times. That comes from the policy arena.
Well, it's the uncertainty is just one of the things with that going on in the market, just the uncertainty. Do you see that changing, Doug? And then I want to bring Joe in here on the discussion. Do you see this uncertainty easing at all through this year or actually crescendoing and growing?
Well, the reason we call it Year of the Political Economy is we think that not just domestically but globally as well, politics will be the dominant headline. You can start – you were talking about the Federal Reserve changing its communication strategy. That's because they're deeply involved in monetary policy actions intended to stimulate growth. You've got all of the things that Alice mentioned, the QRM, QM, lots of other things in the mortgage industry that will not be some will be decided, but many will not be decided this year. You have all of the prospectively expiring tax provisions on businesses and on households, and then internationally, they have all of the actions that are underway in trying to coordinate some policy solutions in Europe. So we don't see that as stopping during this year because the thing that will continue to bring it to a crescendo is the presidential election.
Yeah, no question about that. Joe, let's get you in here. Joe Farr. You already talked to Doug just for a few minutes here. Let's dive into some of the questions. I know you want to go to the GFI.
I'd like to ask first, since we're right here talking about the politics, what does Doug think will come out of the president's speech tomorrow night? And then are you handicapping? Is there going to be any QE3 announcement on Wednesday, or what do you expect to come from the Fed?
Sure. Well, with regard to the president's speech, there was a kind of a rumor that went through Washington that there was going to be some January surprise, and then there was a discussion about the potential of a recess appointment of the head of the FHFA We discounted both of those. Our sense was that that was sort of Washington insider noise, but I think that's true. I would expect there to be some commentary on the housing market in the speech, because the housing is a major factor in terms of economic growth, but I would expect more focus on jobs, because from our perspective, for the housing market to heal, there needs to be job growth. The households start to expand once employment starts to expand and income starts to grow, and that's what will lead to the absorption of the supply that's out there. So from our perspective, it's really on the demand side of the equation. With regard to the Fed, we do not have in our current forecast the Fed launching QE3 at this meeting. Certainly can't discount the possibility that they will. A lot of it, we think it's probably the March time frame when they would do that, if they're going to do it, and a lot of it will depend on their sense of what's going on in first quarter growth, which we have actually slowing down from fourth quarter 2011.
Yeah. And so one of the things they're going to do is announce with more clarity what their expectation for rates will be in the future. And a lot of people are talking about they will extend the time period that they consider necessary to keep rates extremely low. Do you think they'll do that? And if so, will that be good for mortgage rates?
I think if they may, depends on their long-term view, which they've moved their forecast down to where we're now sort of in the center of theirs. We haven't changed ours much. So, they say the three rules of forecasting: if you give a number, don't give a date. If you give a date, don't give a number. If you get it right, don't look surprised. So we're not looking surprised at the moment. I think they will, if they do extend that horizon, they will put qualifiers around it so that they can, if conditions change materially, they can adjust it without having to be subject to the criticism of whipsawing markets. So I think it's a challenge for them. Clearly, consumers hear what they have to say. We've pointed that out to them. We've been surveying 1,000 consumers a month now for almost 2 years. And
wow.
In the month where they suggested they were going to keep rates low through the middle of 2013, the percentage of people who thought rates would go up fell 12 percentage points. So the public is listening to them, not just the business community, but also the household sector is paying attention to what they say. So I think this meeting, from our perspective, is a focus on communication. It won't shock us if they were to do a QE3 action. They may have some leading indicators that they watch that would line up with our expectation that first quarter growth will be back down again, and that might stimulate them to do it. But we have it further out than that.
All right. Well, and then Doug, I would like to get into the guarantee fee. We as an industry have just absorbed, or I guess we're kind of through the process of absorbing that in our mortgage rates and passing those on to the customer, at least that first 10 basis points. Do you see additional increases in guarantee fees, and when might that come if you do? And then what do you make of the payroll tax reduction extension law that talked about the fee being basically a market fee?
Well, that was an interesting twist of public policy. A little hard to figure out what the line of logic is there. If the intent is to solidify mortgage markets by giving a focus on them, tying something outside of the industry to that is an interesting approach. As far as GC changes, there's been a lot of discussion primarily about executive compensation. That sort of absorbed the attention of the regulator, the attention of the agencies, not to mention Wall Street. That's been a very, very front issue subject. There's been testimony on the Hill on that by executives from all the relevant agencies. So I think that in the near term, that has sort of been the focal point. You know, the white paper said that the intent, one of the things that should be accomplished should be to encourage the entrance of private capital into the marketplace, and it referenced specifically raising G fees. So I think that will come back onto the agenda at some point, but the timing of that, it may fall under that discussion of our headline for our forecast, which is "Year of the Political Economy," and I think that it will be subject to some of those changes.
Well, you talk about the white paper and several times. I want to make sure our listeners know where they can go to download that. I'm assuming that's available to anybody to go download and read, Doug?
It should be on the Treasury website, U.S. Treasury website. It was issued out of the Treasury Department.
Okay, so, good.
Yeah. If people have a hard time finding it, they can send us and we'll pull it up.
All right, good. Good. Let's talk I'm going to throw it back to you, Joe, and let you continue on. You had some great questions. I know you had a lot of your listeners send in questions and some of the ones that you gather from that. So let's go through and make sure we get all those answered, and then I have some more after we get through that, and then get it over to Andy for a couple.
Well, I guess relating the housing market, we've seen things turn a little bit to the upside, and I wondered if your forecast for the housing market was for it to sort of continue on this rebound, or is that going to be one of the things that in the first quarter you see as a reason for a little turn down in the growth opportunities?
Well, the contribution of housing to GDP growth is so low at the present time that even a significant percentage increase wouldn't result in a huge change in GDP. One of the things that to me is striking is the number of finished new homes available for sale is the lowest that it's been since World War II, and our population is 2.5 times what it was at that,
Whoa,
at that,
that
point.
That's a huge data point. Didn't we just I want to highlight that. It's the lowest it's been.
Yeah, now I didn't look at the most the most recent month, and I think new home sales comes out again this week, so check it. But it's going to be within a thousand or two of the lowest. It was, I think it was 2 months ago, it was the lowest that it had been since World War II, which is basically when they started measuring it.
Right.
It just gives you a sense of the low level of economic activity in the housing market, which is measured as a contributor to GDP. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of refinancing in the mortgage market and that kind of thing, but that doesn't contribute nearly to GDP what construction does.
Obviously.
We really need to see the pickup in construction. Our expectation for this year is that we'll be a little better, 3-5% in terms of the number of homes sold, but probably another percent or two down in house prices. So if loan to values stay constant, you probably will, on the loan production side for home purchases, probably pretty flat to last year, and then refinances will fall off as the burnout rate. Even given the HARP 2 changes, the burnout rate just is such that you don't see a large volume. So we think about $1 trillion total production this year, which is down some from last year. I had 2008 was the low point, then 2009 bumped up a little bit. 2010 went back down, and in the fall of 2010, we said we think this is probably the bottom for the number of homes sold. But of course, a lot of people are paying cash today, so something on the order of 30% of people, which is way above historical norms. That number in a normal market is more down in the 10-12% range. But cash gets you through a lot faster in the transaction than...
Isn't that attributable to the number of investors in here buying up these properties at these bargain basement prices?
There definitely has been a lot of investor activity, and that's rational. For one thing, it's obvious the home ownership rate was unsustainable at 69%. We're actually moving back to a more normal balance of owning versus renting. So, and the place that we're seeing the growth in the rentals is actually in the single-family properties. But that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Think of the fact that somebody that bought a house but lost it, they told you what kind of house they would like to live in, a single-family detached property. So if there's one available for rent at a reasonable rent, then that's a likely outcome. So we've seen each of the last 4 years a 1 percentage point increase in the share of total rental properties that are 1 to 4 units. They're now about 55% of all rentals.
There used to be a formula that when either mortgage payments got 125% of what rental prices were, or the opposite, you know, the when rents got 125% of where home the mortgage payment would be, that you'd see things flip. Do you see any of that staying steady, or are we going to actually see people are going to be willing to endure more rents, therefore a healthier rental market, for a period of time because of the uncertainty, going back to your first point that you made?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, we do watch the rent-to-price ratio and the price-to-income ratio, so various ratios. I think that at the present time there have been a lot of households that took some credit damage that
right.
would be hard for them to get back into the own space in the near term. Although if you think about it, if somebody got in trouble in 2006, they're now almost 6 years into what
right.
could be a recovery period if they had employment. So we may start to
right.
see some of those folks coming back online. Second thing is there's a lot of folks who have lost jobs, had discontinuous employment, or maybe they're college graduates that are coming out without good employment right out of the box and maybe some college debt. Those things might damp down ownership in the short run and put the advantage to rent in that time frame. So in the near term, we still see some strengthening on the rental side, but then it's going to start to devolve into local market differences. So if you've got a market where employment is growing rapidly, that rebalancing will take place earlier than someplace where there are large supplies of houses available but no job growth. So you have to start looking kind of locally. And that's our advice anyway. At all times, the most important thing you can know about any market is the dynamics of its employment. Because
yep.
One thing we did learn through the crisis is if you're going to lend money to somebody for 30 years, it's a good thing if they have a job.
Yes. They're very fundamental. Cash flow is king. Yeah. Joe, go on. I know you had a couple more questions. It's so important to make sure they have that one thing. And it goes to the point, if we don't have job growth, I mean, which goes to the whole political nature of the whole economy that we're in. So very, very. I like your title for the year. Joe, I know you have a lot more things you wanted to get into, so
well,
I'm going to turn it back to you.
Okay. Europe. You know, we've been reporting about that. Everyone's been reading about that. Doug, do you think Europe's going to be a net positive or net negative as they work through their issues for mortgage rates in particular, but the U.S. economy in the coming year?
Well, it's one fundamental thing to keep in the back of your head is that the whole crisis, the global crisis, was triggered by excessive leverage. That's a typical source of cyclical problems, is excessive leverage. This time it was a global issue. Now,
yeah.
What you would like to do is reduce leverage, but what's actually happened around the globe, including in the U.S., is instead of eliminating the leverage, what we've done is transfer it from the private sector to the public sector. So
mm-hmm.
in Europe, what's going on in the discussions between the European Central Bank and between the fiscal authorities in each of the countries and their financial institutions is finding a way to liquefy those institutions and prevent sovereign defaults. That does not mean that the debt has been eliminated, so they are basically kicking the can down the road. In the process of kicking the can down the road, they've pulled back from the brink of another round of a major financial sector meltdown. In the discussion period, we've seen significant flight to quality to the U.S. market and downward pressure on rates here as a result. So we've benefited from that perspective. Some of that will be taken back now because the very near-term major fears have dissipated, but it doesn't mean the problem's gone away. And
right.
Southern Europe is already in recession. Northern Europe slowing significantly. One of the major international agencies I see just essentially forecast about 0% growth for the Eurozone over the course of this year. We would agree with that, and in fact, we would think Europe in total over several years is likely to see very low growth as they wrestle with getting their fiscal situation under control. That what that means for the U.S. is while trade with Europe is not as great as, say, trade with Canada and Mexico, it's not unimportant. And if they're not growing, they're not going to be a great export market for us. So that does have, at the margins, an impact on our growth prospects. Our greater fear was that you would see the banking system of one or more of the countries go down, and that would have had some potential contagion effects on us that might have been more severe. So net, some of the flight to quality benefits of lower rates will be taken back as the fears of going off the edge in Europe have receded. But a part of the low rate story in the U.S. is still that they expect very weak growth in Europe.
Does that,
so that kinda,
I was just going to say, does that go to a liquidity concerns for us here as it relates to MBSs?
Well, I think that no, I don't believe that that's going to be a big issue for the U.S. market. I think there's still a healthy appetite for MBS. Of course, a lot of that relates to the current posture of public policy with regard to the GSEs, which are under conservatorship, and so investors have a view of the relationship of those securities to the government. And a bigger issue will be dealt with when eventually the policy related to the GSEs is clarified.
Is there any out-of-the-blue concerns that we should have, unanticipated, unexpected concerns that could come out of Asia? I mean, I guess that's a rhetorical question. I mean, I guess that's always a possibility, but do you foresee anything coming out of Asia that is going to have a negative impact on our rates and the liquidity as it relates to the mortgage market and our overall market?
Well, it's a little difficult to know how much you can trust the official statistics coming out of China. But, you know, direct observation, the level of infrastructure investment that they've had underway for a number of years seems to be reaching an end. That is, the benefits that can be gotten out of additional infrastructure investment at the level that it's being done seem to be coming to a close within the next year or two. That means that they need to shift their economy to much more of a consumption-based economy, and there are a couple of issues there. One is they're going to have to raise wage rates. That will cause them some competitive problems vis-a-vis the U.S. We will actually benefit from that. And you've already seen the leading indicators of some firms bringing jobs back here because of the shift in relative wage rates. It also raises some question about capital flows. A lot of the capital that funds the U.S. has over the years, funded the U.S. housing market, has actually come from Asia. So that raises the question of when they rebalance their economy, where will that capital come from and how much will it cost?
So much to be taken into consideration. We have had Andy Schell sitting in the background awfully quiet here recently. Andy, I want to make sure we open the mic up to you to see if you have any questions that you wanted to ask of Doug.
Well, let me see if I can find my mute button.
There it goes.
Thanks, Dave. No, it's been good listening to the discussion and hearing what Doug has to say about
all these very, very important things. And, you know, one of the things that he said earlier on, or one of the things you mentioned early, Doug, was you talked about housing and jobs. And in for the last 3.5 years, people have been talking about housing and jobs. It's not like it's a new issue. It's an issue that we've known. This is what it's going to take to make some movement on all of this. And, you know, we've had the cash for clunkers. We had the first housing stimulus that created a bit of a bubble. And yet, even since the housing stimulus, we've had rates drop since then, and still demand isn't picking up. So how do we know that what we're going to do now is going to work when what we've done in the past hasn't?
But one of the key things that you said was we had temporary programs, right? So the cash for clunkers was a temporary program. That was launched when consumer confidence was at the lowest level I didn't go back in the data to see how long it had been, but it had been years and years, probably the mid-70s, since consumer confidence was that low. So people said, well, then how come people hadn't bought houses? Well, cars, and you know, the response to that is people are opportunistic. If you tell them, we'll give you $4,500 if you want to go out and buy a car today as a gift, there's a bunch of people who may be very pessimistic about the outlook, but if they were going to have to replace their car and you're giving them $4,500, they'll take action on that. And in fact, that happened. So what you saw was this huge spike upward in auto sales, and then as soon as the program was over, you saw an equally large, huge spike downwards on the other side of it. So on net, you essentially added nothing. The same thing essentially occurred with the temporary tax credit for homeownership. You saw a run-up the first time that it was put in place, then you saw a run-up the second time that it was put in place. House prices in both instances stabilized or even rose a little bit, but as soon as it was gone, they resumed and returned to the point they were at prior to that on a downward path. So the lesson there is temporary typically has very weak, if any, long-term benefits. So the other related to that is the issue that we have some 140, I've seen a couple of different estimates, I haven't done an estimate myself, but some 140 or so federal tax provisions on businesses and households that expire December 31st. Now, if you go back 2 or 3 decades, you would see that number was maybe 10, 15, something like that. So the degree of uncertainty in the planning horizon for both businesses and households is many times greater. I always track what is small business doing, because they're the engine for job growth in any expansion, typically. And now they've moved into a positive area in terms of hiring. About 5% are now saying that they will hire in the next year. It's been at zero for a long time, or negative, laying people off for quite some time. But when you ask them why not more, the first thing that they say is lack of sales, and the second thing they say is uncertainty about their regulatory and tax horizon. So that level of uncertainty absolutely affects their planning. Then when you think about the health care bill and the first provisions of that coming into place in 2013 affecting labor costs, that's also going to have an impact on hiring plans, and they make note of that. So I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish it. Yeah, go ahead and finish that thought. I'm just looking at the clock. We have just about 1 minute left to go here for the program.
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, the most important thing that we can do is to clarify what the rules are going to be, but I just don't think that's all going to happen until after this election is over.
Joe, one last question that you didn't get asked that you want to get asked, I know.
Inflation, Doug. We've seen CPI and PPI, core CPI and PPI, rise steadily over the last 12 to 18 months. Do you see that continuing, or is it going to level out?
Well, I think our expectation is that it's going to level out. You're seeing people measuring it with and without housing. Of course, one of the things that's been holding it down has been the decline in house prices and housing costs in general. The rents have started to rise, so I think we're back toward the top of the Fed's comfort zone.
Okay, thank you.
Doug, as Doug Duncan, Chief Economist for Fannie Mae, has been our guest this week. It's so much appreciated that you've taken the time out of your busy day to join us, Doug. Thank you so much. Looking forward to having you back. That's good, folks. Stay tuned next week, or come back and listen to us next week, as we're going to be diving into everything accounting you want to know. The New Year's resolution, it's like working out. Not the, always the most first thing in the front part of your mind, but you definitely want to listen to the steps you can take next week. We'll talk to you about the call report. Have a blessed week, everyone. Talk to you soon. Thank you so much for being a part of us.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.